Welcome to AusFox Rocks, an Australian-based Microsoft Visual Fox Pro podcast. Recording on Tuesday, March 7, 2006. Thanks for joining us. Well, thanks for joining us for episode 3 of AusFox Rocks. Nice to have you along. And sitting opposite me is my co-host for the show, Scott Scovell. Scott, welcome to the show.
Good to be here, Craig.
In this show, we're going to be looking at the topic of building better solutions. So we'll be covering design, good design, design patterns, test-driven development, unit testing, things like that.
And we'll be talking about some of the things I've brought back from the Patterns and Practices Summit in Sydney.
Yeah, so that coming up, and also a special AusFox Rocker of the Month in just a few moments. And now it's time for our AusFox Rocker of the Month. So tell us a little bit about this month's AusFox Rocker.
This month we have someone who's very active in the community.
Yes.
Active at conferences, forums, blogs.
Yes.
Has wrote an open source tool that we might have heard of, GenScreenX.
Yes.
Wrote the class browser in the VFP product in the component gallery.
Yep, I think I know where we're headed.
We're narrowing it down now, aren't we? Yep. He was also the VFP product manager from 2001 to very recently, March 2006.
Yes.
Our AusFox Rocker of the Month is...
Ken Levy. And well deserving of the prize. I guess we can't really do justice to the amazing impact that he's had on the product. He's really pushed it a great way, and he's had a very passionate input into the community. I think many of the blogs that have discussed him going have captured all that we can possibly say.
That's right. He's really has been the face of VFP for... last 5 years now, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's done an amazing job, and we're very thankful for all the work he's done, and it is a loss for the community. Would you say it's a loss for the product?
I agree with you. It is a big loss to the community, as Ken was so active. For the product, I don't think so.
Okay.
I think there's still a lot of good talent in it, Microsoft VFP team, a lot of passion still.
Yes.
So I'd say the product will go on strong.
Yeah.
And we're already seeing a little bit about that. We'll talk more later on.
Yes.
It'll be more of a loss for the community.
Yeah, I tend to agree. But let's have a chat about Ken Levy leaving. And a couple of points there. Firstly, this is a good thing for him. You'd agree. He's moving to the Windows Live team and opportunities come up. He's taken it. He has, as you mentioned before, he's been there from August 2001 till March 2006. That's a good run.
That's a long time at Microsoft.
It is, isn't it? And people move on. And one thing that I've always tried to think about as I've been a developer and in my career so far is this concept of making yourself redundant. This kind of idea of you get the systems in place and your code is very maintainable, you can pass it on to someone else so that you can move on. And it's good for all parties. It allows people underneath you to rise up and you to rise on further. And is this something that you've found in other people when you've been discussing?
Yeah, there was a different instance though. At the Patterns and Practices Summit, I was talking to one of the Microsoft presenters there, and he was saying that once he no longer feels the passion in his job, so that's why it's a little bit different from what you were talking about earlier.
Sure.
And typically that occurs because he rises up to a point where he's managing managers or whatever. He's not doing what he was passionate about. And he was describing how he likes to, every 5 or 6 years, destroy his career.
Yeah, right. Strong language, but yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And the intent is he'll just pick himself up and move into another field or somewhere else where he feels passionate about. So
yeah, right.
In order to do that, yeah, you need to make yourself redundant so you don't leave a big mess behind.
Yeah, and he's done this with some... who are we talking about here, by the way?
Sorry, this is. I was talking to Jim Newkirk.
Yeah, so we were thinking along. This is NUnit, and he's had some pretty big babies.
Very successful.
Yeah, he's managed to pass on. Yes, and the only thing I would say though, in Ken's instance, is it would have been nice if the transition was a little bit extended. It seemed to happen quite quickly, and this is not a criticism of him at all. You know, the positions come up. But one thing I would have liked to have seen is more of getting to know Meland, a bit more exposure in the community. Of course, he's been at conferences and things like that, so he's not a complete newbie. But I tend to think, you know, when Bill Gates moved aside and Steve Ballmer took over, obviously a much higher profile situation. But if there'd been a very quick changeover there, the community and the worldwide market might not have accepted it so rapidly. But in this instance, it's happened quickly.
So with Ken's replacement, Milan Lilly, you would have liked to have seen him sort of attend a few more conferences at the side of Ken, and Ken sort of introducing him to the community a bit more.
Yeah, a little bit more exposure, especially I think on the FoxPro site homepage, maybe him taking over a few of the monthly letters and things like that. It would have been a nice to have.
Well, you're right, because I don't know much about Milan. What do you know about Milan?
No, well, not much at all. And let's say a big welcome to Milan. You know, there is a Channel 9 video on him talking about the SQL CLR, and you can get to see him a little bit there. But I don't know. Well, what do you know about him?
Well, being over here in Australia, we don't get the opportunity to visit the conferences over in America. A lot of them. But he was at Southwest Fox this year.
Last year, yeah.
But so I haven't ever seen him except on that Channel 9 video. So that's how I get to, you know, eyeball him, if you like.
Yeah.
But I know very little. I know he was a highly decorated Marine in Vietnam, two Purple Hearts.
Yeah, he's actually a bodybuilding champion. But after that, when he's from his tour of duty, which he was quite well known in that bodybuilding community. Although that might not be so well known by the FoxPro community.
Yeah, and that success he had in the bodybuilding community obviously progressed him into the children's magician scene.
That's right.
So it was a natural step into...
And very well respected in the children's party circuit. So with those skills, FoxPro is in good hands, you'd agree.
Well, that's right. That's right. I'm surprised Microsoft didn't poach him earlier.
I know. That's, yeah. So a big welcome to Milan. Great to have you along, and we're very much looking forward to getting to know you better. So speaking of Milan, you saw the March letter from Milan, and in particular he pointed to the March CTP of the Sedna release.
Yeah, this is very exciting. This is the first Sedna deliverable that's come through.
Yeah. I guess the one thing that I really like is they're delivering on their transparency promise. This is sort of, you know, it's early days, and if you've looked at the wrapper, it's small. I mean, let's not pretend it's a huge thing, but they're getting it out. The documents were there, I think, earlier. I saw on the VS Data blog a little while back. They're there. They're pushing it out. So this is definitely a good step.
This is great. It's a long road till late 2007 when Sedna is to come out. So this is a good start.
Yeah. So it's a good early sign from Milan and also the FoxPro team.
So where can we find the March CTP?
Okay, well, there's a link on the letter from Milan in March. We've got a link in the show notes, and it's just a downloads on the Microsoft site, so check it out. You do need the .NET 2.0 framework on your machine to make use of that, but I guess most people, it's rolling out onto the developer desktops pretty much standard these days. So, Scott, what's caught your eye on the blogosphere lately?
A couple of Craig Boyd's blogs has caught my attention.
Yeah?
Lately, he's put out a couple of blogs on Windows Vista and VFP.
Yeah, weren't they great?
So he's got a virtual machine up running a beta of Windows Vista, and he's running Visual FoxPro under.
Yeah, I think they're great to see, aren't they? And, of course, Craig Boyd's going to be involved more and more in the Sedna project, I guess, as a third party with Microsoft, which is fantastic news. The really exciting thing that I think about this, the VFP on Vista, is not so much for our customers and the perception they have, because I actually don't think they most of the corporates and our customers are thinking about Vista at all. A lot of our customers are still stuck on Office 2000 and some even earlier versions, and they're on Windows 2000, etc. So that's probably far from their mind. But where I think this is important is in the developer space. You know, we as VFP developers are often having to defend FoxPro to other developer communities. And I think this is a great way of saying, yeah, look, it runs on Vista. Now, just so that you might appreciate this point, I think of the opposite. Imagine if Microsoft had come out and said, we are not supporting FoxPro on Vista. In fact, it won't run. You're still in the same situation. Corporates probably won't be caring about that for a number of years. But in the developer community, like, how embarrassing is that? So I think this is just one more positive step that says FoxPro is still alive, and perception is everything in that space.
Yeah, that's right. I think we're going to get a lot of cases in maybe, let's say, 12 months' time, mm-hmm. where you're, as a VFP developer, you're showing a colleague who works in another space somewhere, mm-hmm. And you know those moments where he goes, is that VFP?
Yeah.
You know. So, yeah, that's right. This is what Craig's done, is given us that little bit of insight and getting us ready for Windows Vista.
So we mentioned earlier that you've been on the Patents and Practices Summit lately. Tell us a little bit about that, Scott.
Yeah, the Patents and Practices Summit in Sydney was a conference sponsored by Microsoft. They mm-hmm. brought out the Patents and Practices team, and we had 3 days of presentations. Great conference, great speakers.
Yeah. Actually, just before you go on, tell me a little bit about the team. I mean, are they a small team, large team? What's the state of the Patents and Practices team at Microsoft these days?
Well, that's right. The Patents and Practices team was a handful of people a couple of years ago mm-hmm. who started putting together, mainly in the infrastructure space. So mm-hmm. we're talking about, you know, how to set up your Exchange server through, you know, setting up your DMZ for this and that. Sure. And they put out a couple of textbooks mm-hmm. Along those lines. But now what the majority of their work they're doing is with the .NET framework in the developer spaces.
Fine.
So some of our users might be familiar with the deliverables that they've come out with, Enterprise Library, mm-hmm. The application blocks preceded that, but you know, then they've got the CAB and the GAT and SCBAT, and I'm pretty sure they're sitting right now trying to work out new acronyms for the products they're coming out with.
Prolific, yeah.
The team's grown quite a bit,
right.
And now Microsoft has really seen the value in this and investing a lot of time and effort and money.
Yeah, is it true they've got their own wing over at Redmond these days?
Yeah, that's right. They're actually right in the middle of refurbishing that whole wing. So it looks, from what we were presented with, it's easily 100 developer desks.
Wow.
So whether they put all the bums on seats, I'm not sure, but you know, this is the type of scale that we're looking
at
now.
They're obviously taking it very seriously then, Microsoft.
Yeah, and I think Microsoft have been listening to the communities with the .NET framework, and have recognised that there's probably that learning curve is quite steep.
Yeah,
and this is just my opinion. What the whole direction of Patents and Practices is to put out guidance in how to build better solutions using the .NET framework.
Right. Okay. So you mentioned .NET framework, of course. VFP, is it a different area, or can we apply these same techniques?
That's right. When we're talking about patterns and practices, of course, we're talking about design patterns.
Right.
And development practices, if you like.
Yeah, okay.
So that's not something that's unique to the .NET framework or any other language. Mm. What Microsoft do is, with these deliverables, they're saying, here are the design patterns, or here are the practices that we are recommending, or we see a best practice, if you like.
Hmm.
And they're saying, and here is an implementation
mm-hmm.
specific to C# or specific to the .NET framework.
Okay.
What we as VFP developers need to do is listen to that same content that's coming out, the design patterns and the best practices, but then stop and port them over to VFP and start implementing them into VFP.
Yeah, okay. What I found really exciting about last month's user group, Visual Foxtrot user group, where you presented on design patterns for VFP, just looking around the room, you could see a few people just starting to think, yeah. And I could just say, yeah, they got it. Design patterns. And we'll talk about what design patterns are in a minute. And I think what we're trying to do in this show and in the activities we're involved in is sort of promoting this better design and building better solutions. And part of that is not sort of being limited to what's currently available in the VFP arena, but yeah, from .NET or wherever. Primarily .NET because we're Microsoft House and that's kind of what we're exposed to, but it wouldn't necessarily have to be limited to those areas. And so a thing like the Patterns and Practices Summit, which is teaching really good approaches to how we build software of quality, is a really valuable thing.
And some of the most exciting moments of that conference was where we were being walked through some implementation on the .NET framework, and I'm sitting there getting really excited because I'm in my mind translating this into how we're going to be doing this in VFP and bringing that concept, or even looking at ways of constructing those tool sets to put into the VFP IDE.
Yeah, and actually I think you've hit on something really important there that I would say as a general kind of indication of good design is when you're thinking that design can be easily translated to any development environment, you're probably on a good path. But if you're stuck on, oh, it could only ever be used in one area, then maybe it's you need to rethink or get a bit bigger picture on your actual solution approach.
That's right. And if you're thinking along the lines of design patterns, you're probably not using a design pattern there. If you look at the definition of design patterns, they are not limited to a specific language.
Right.
Design patterns are targeted at solving a specific problem or a specific, or giving you a solution to a specific set of conditions.
Right. So let's talk a little bit more about better design and why are we actually promoting better design, Scott?
Well, one of the trends that I'm still seeing in the Foxtrot space is we seem to be struggling with coming away from this rad tool set, tool mindset.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that, okay, the boss wants a report from that data. Okay, well, I'll just import that data into Fox. I'll write a quick nasty report and blah blah blah.
We're still seeing
a lot of those sorts of showcase code being showcased on the net. What I'm saying is, you know, we've got to be thinking bigger picture here.
Okay.
Implementing design patterns, thinking about design.
Yes.
We seem to be spending a lot of time and effort looking at design when we're talking about our databases and our data structures.
That's right.
That sort of stuff.
And of course we are data focused developers, but you're saying, okay, we need to think bigger now.
It's like we're stopping at that point and saying, well, I've done my design, I've done that part of it,
right?
No more design now. I'll whack together a UI and what about business objects? I'll just chuck that all in.
That's
what I'm saying. Let's carry on this design process,
or as I like to say, that business object, we can fit that in the click button of the form.
That's right.
So true. It's not funny, but yeah, go on. Sorry.
Which we wrote back in 2.6, and we'll just use that code.
That's right. Okay, and so I guess you're saying we've got to move on from the rad tool mindset.
Yeah, and it's very important with that in mind is we've got to know when to use design patterns, know when we've gone too far with our design. We don't want to move into architecture gold plating.
Yes.
You know, but so there's a time and place. Design patterns are very good because they document ways to solve a solution, but they also tell us about the benefits and liabilities up front.
Yeah.
So we can make that evaluation before we apply it. One of the things that I picked up on at the Patterns and Practices Summit was a lot of the PMP team members from Microsoft are evangelists of agile development process. And it, they were big proponents of using test-driven development with their agile development.
Right.
And if you're, you know, only a Foxborough developer, or you, you know, you mainly spend most of your time working with Visual Foxborough, the whole tool set for unit testing and test-driven development is not very strong.
Mm.
So I know myself, I'm not a big proponent of test-driven development, mainly because my tool sets are not there.
Right, but okay.
What is test-driven development? What's your take?
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, you're right. We need to sort of, I guess, define what test-driven development is. And Wikipedia has a helpful definition, which is along the lines of it's a technique that involves writing test cases first that then need to be implemented in code. And it says, you know, it's to achieve rapid feedback to the developer. And I think that's right. It's about writing something that a developer can use and run, usually automated, that gives them feedback, oh, their code's not passing the spec. Now, the thing about test-driven development in that sense is it's a limited segment of the project. And so what we need to be thinking about, especially as VFP developers, or any developer really, is the overall solution and does it meet requirements? Customers have a requirement, does it meet it? And I actually think test-driven development should be pushed more along the line of making sure that the customer requirements are met as well. Also, the thing about test-driven development in that sort of narrow definition, developer only, is it doesn't meet the whole spectrum at the other end. The actual user acceptance testing and the system testing, the full system testing down the track. So there's parts of it that it probably doesn't match, and I think you agree with this. There's actually a high cost to the unit testing development, especially if you're a proponent of the 100% code coverage unit testing methodology.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you're spending time writing your unit tests, and quite often, you know, it's that that last 5% rule. You know, will take 80% of the time, because if you're aiming for 100% code coverage, you'll find yourself coming back and creating all these unit tests to try and meet those, you know, the last 10 or 5% of the code coverage that you're trying to get. But you'll find that last 5 or 10% of your code coverage is actually your really stable code. And that's normally really simple, no-brainer stuff. You know it works.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And the coding, the testing for that is actually a burden on your project, and so there's that higher cost. You mentioned the tools, and in VFP, I guess, being that GUI focus, well, not focus, but ends up being very GUI-centric, as you mentioned, the tools are not there. I mean, there are things like FoxUnit, and there's the test harness in VFP, and we've been playing with WinRunner and other tools there. But we find here, and I know there has been some blogs about this recently that have tried to shed some light on it, but it's actually hard. At the end of the day, there's a testing team with people going through our programs, making sure they work, and especially making sure they meet what the client want. Because the developer often is, you know, one step removed from that and doesn't have the user's hat on in some ways, and that's where a testing team really help out. Now, while we're talking about unit testing and testing in general, we're probably treading on a few of the purest toes in the whole testing space. So,
hey, but it doesn't matter. We're developers in unmanaged code. You know, we're heathens.
Well, that's right.
We're outcasts already.
Yeah, so they wouldn't care what we're saying anyway. But one of the things that I really liked is the Adam Kogan interview on .NET Rocks. I don't know if you listen to this, but there's a section towards the end where he's talking about unit testing. And his approach is not the 100% code coverage. In fact, he's against that because it's an added burden to the project. But he's basically saying unit testing is for testing fragile code. And I thought this was an excellent point, and this is something the VFP developers can take on board, just as it's common sense, really. So what he says is, let me give you an example. He actually includes all his unit testings in his apps that go out to clients. So it tests fragile code. For example, do you have network permissions to write to a file on the network? Yes, no. So he'll have a unit test to write a file. Okay, so program's crashing out on the client site, let's say. They send in the screen dump, call the support desk, all the usual guff. What he's saying is, okay, help menu, test cases, run. You run that, all the unit tests, send them back the report. Okay, we've run unit testing and 62 fails. You don't have permissions. That's an excellent way of incorporating developer tests into your product to make your product actually higher quality.
Yeah, that's right. And it really is not going to the quality of that unit of code, is it? It's applying it in a certain circumstance, so it's you're getting extra benefit.
So Scott, we've been talking about patterns and practices and design patterns and test-driven development and a whole bunch of three-letter acronyms. Brings us to the whole point of buzzwords. What's happening in the buzzwords arena?
Oh, we've got a lot of buzzwords, actually. We've been talking about patterns and practices and some of the deliverables that that team's been bringing out, like the Entlib and GAT and CAB and all those sorts of things. But a lot of the talk that was coming from Microsoft, the language that was coming out of those Microsoft speakers, I picked up on a couple of great ones. User experience.
Yep, love that one.
Because they're proponents of Agile, we kept getting a lot of story.
Yeah.
You know, this is a great user story. This is the story of a great user experience.
Mm-hmm.
And the word space, you might have heard us both using that word.
We've been trying to pepper the show tonight with it. Yeah, it's a great one, isn't it?
Yes, we've been playing a bit of buzzword bingo, and mm-hmm. if you've got card number 83 and tick them off, then you can be winners. But we've also seen out of Microsoft with the product naming, we've got this whole Express line of products.
Yeah, I reckon it's a good name, Express, but it is. Yeah, I was thinking we should have changed the upcoming OzFox Lite to OzFox Express. Would have fitted in really nicely.
So Express is superseding Lite, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
So some of the other stuff, if I can just keep going,
yeah,
is the top of acronyms that we've got coming through. So with Windows Vista, we've got, you know, those three or four main platforms, the Windows Presentation Foundation, WPF,
yeah.
Windows Communication Foundation, WCF,
mm.
the Windows Workflow Foundation.
Now that'd have to be WWF, wouldn't it?
Well, interesting enough, it's just WF, and there's
right.
a fairly good story from that. I had a great user experience at the Patterns and Practices Summit,
yeah.
where I was told of the WWF story. As you know, WWF is also the American, World Wrestling Federation.
Yes, so that's right.
As we know in Australia, is Rock and Roll Wrestling.
Yeah, yeah.
But also, and more importantly, it's the acronym for the World Wildlife Foundation.
Yeah.
That Wildlife Conservation Party.
Absolutely.
Now, if you've got the World Wrestling Federation, Microsoft, and the World Wildlife Foundation all in one room, you would have thought, you know, Microsoft would be the winner. It's a bit like Roxas' paper,
yeah,
in a way.
Yeah, who gets to own that tail?
But apparently World Wrestling Federation got sued by the Panda Lovers, and the Panda Lovers just blew them out of the water.
Really?
And in court, basically. So the World Wrestling Foundation can't use WWF. Microsoft, who wanted to use WWF for Windows Workflow Foundation, have decided not even to go there.
Yeah.
Don't mess with the pandas.
That's right. That great blog, yeah.
And, they've settled on WF. So to cut a long story short, we've got WPF, WCF, I think there's one other in there, but WF for the Workflow Foundation.
Yeah. What do you think of this whole naming? Like, I love the word Avalon, you know. Why did that go?
Avalon was good.
Yeah.
Avalon was good, mainly because of the song. Everyone's got that song going in their head when they see Avalon.
Is that right? Yeah.
But
I always thought of the beach. Great beaches here in Sydney, but yeah. Anyway.
Buzzwords.
Buzzwords. Now, in a minute, we're going to be talking about conferences in general, and you're actually going to be saying we've got a bit of a conference comeback, but I thought that would lead us nicely to promote OzFox Lite to anyone in Australia that's listening. Now, this is focused on, you know, the whole Asia-Pac VFP network of developers. And one of the things we'll actually be talking about is this importance of networking. And why I wanted to mention this is because as VFP developers, it's often in our interests and benefits to actually be able to point people to other people, other VFP developers that have experience in areas that we don't. So, for example, Westwind web connection, great tool. We actually don't have much experience in it. So we point people, say, to the Quids team up in Newcastle. Crystal Reports, another great product. We actually just don't have the time to cover that. So we point them to Info Today, and there's a whole lot of other things. But the thing is, I actually don't know what everyone in Australia and New Zealand that uses FoxPro, what their skill set is. So one of the things I'm really trying to, well, what I'm really looking forward to at AusFox Live is finding out the great wealth of experience and skill set that's out there in the VFP community.
That's right, this networking where we sort of get a catalogue, if you like, together of different skill sets so we can move that around. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, exactly. One of the other things we'll be talking about is VFP business skills, and we started doing this at User Group last month. And there's a real need for this because we are such good developers and we've been using it for a long time. We know our product, but we actually don't know how to promote VFP, for example, to clients, or how to use networking effectively, or this whole concept of perception is everything, using, you know, this our presentation of our products to clients to our best advantage. So,
and this is quite important at the user group level, because a lot of our audience at the user groups are small VFP developers. So they might be have, you know, self business, or we're talking directly to, you know, the software development manager of that company. So yeah, very relevant to that sort of audience.
Now, speaking about conferences, Scott, you're of the opinion that we've got a bit of a conference comeback happening.
Yeah, I've just noticed that over the last 2 years, the sheer number of conferences that we've been having has seems to be increasing, and they seem to be more of a show, you know, more of an extravaganza.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, my desk, I get brochures every week, it seems. You know, there's a Linux World conference, or wireless networking conference, or corporate governance in IT conference, and, of course, Microsoft conferences and stuff like that. So it definitely seems to be more of them. Do you think this is a good thing, though?
I think it's a great thing. The conferences that we've been attending lately have been really developer-focused.
Mm.
The quality of speakers that are coming over have been very high. And this is a good thing, because as developers, we're mixing with those, we're getting to talk to them, we're getting to mix with other developers as well. So it has a lot of great benefits from other traditional sources of getting information.
Yeah, great point. And what I'd like to do is promote the conferences, especially in the VFP community that we're seeing, and there is a new one this year in the States, and there's regulars, and they're still going strong. And I know some people felt that perhaps more conferences is kind of going to dilute the limited number of attendees, and I sort of take that point, and we're actually taking that point on point when we're thinking of AusFox later in the year, the full thing. But I tend to think it's a good thing, and if there's more but they've got maybe smaller numbers, let's say, I still think that's good, as long as it's achievable for all the speakers to get there. And I think we should be promoting it, and we should also be aiming for the greater good, which is the overall community of FoxPro and the developer learning and the great benefits. So you should, if you're a developer, you should try aim to get to conferences, because you're supporting the community, but you're also going to get enormous benefit out of them. And now it's time for our AusFox Rocks Tip of the Month. And what's this month's tip, Scott?
This month's tip is a feature that was new in 9.
Good.
And that sort of rolls through, doesn't it? New in 9.
Mm.
In previous versions of FoxPro, we've been accustomed to assigning focus to other controls, you know, up and down the tab order via the valid event. So, you know, when if we return 1 from the valid, we would... Mm-hmm. Move to the next control in the tab order, -1, go backwards in the tab order.
Yep.
Or 0, or I think even false works if we want to prevent the focus changing from the current control.
Actually, I just wanted to mention the valid. I think this is an understood, if that's a word, concept. It's often, you know, I just do a bit of code, and people don't realise the power that you can actually gain in the valid. And what's VFP 9 added?
What we've got now is a solution to some of those scenarios where from the valid code we might want to set focus to an object which is outside the context of the tab order. So, you know, absolutely, if you've got like a page frame
Mm-hmm.
Page one, or even indeed any container object, has its own tab order.
Yeah.
So from traditionally, we've been sort of writing, object reference dot set focus from the valid.
Mm-hmm.
That works fine, but there's situations where dynamically you don't know the or you don't have the specific control that you want to set focus to. And again, we've all written those valid events where we have the big case statements where, if this business rule evaluates to true, then we'll, set focus to this control. Particularly when we're dealing with page frames and pages, we want to activate the page, but we want to set focus to that control. So in VFP 9, in the valid event now, we can return an object reference and Visual Fox Pro will set focus to that object reference.
Right.
And the sort of the added bonus there is if you don't actually know the object that's going to take that control, take focus, particularly, if you've got a page, you don't really know what the first control is in that tab order.
Yeah.
You can discover it by going through the controls collection and that sort of thing. But using this in the valid, if we return that object reference, if that object reference is non-visible, such as the page frame, or it's a object that cannot get the focus set to it because it's disabled or invisible or whatever, FoxPro will just set focus to the next control in that tab order.
Right.
So you can see the situation where we might even have one form open, set of business rules gets evaluated in the valid of that control. We can set focus to an object on another form.
Mm.
And we don't really need to know what's going to be the first control in that tab order.
Yeah, very cool. And that's this show's tip of the month. So another item of news in the FoxPro world has been the availability of the VSTS provider. You've had a play with this. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, that's right. I think it was Andrew Coates who first put me onto it. He blogged about it. And it's a beta 2 of the Visual Source Control provider for Visual Studio Team System.
Mm.
It there's one little gotcha with the install, and that's got to do with the strongly named assemblies, but that's all pretty well documented on Andrew Coates' blog. He points off to another author that I can't think of at the moment.
Yeah, we've got a link in the show notes about that, yep.
Yeah, so I'm currently sort of having a play with that.
Mm. I think this is great because, we're using Team Foundation Server here on a web project, .NET project, and it's providing enormous benefits. I mean, Team System, in my opinion, is really delivering on the promise, and I don't say that about a lot of things. And so we're really keen to get this working with VFP, and so we'd be encouraging people out there to start playing with it if it's appropriate.
That's right. And if you're using the Visual Source Safe provider for VFP, then it's not going to replace it. You do get a drop-down of both providers, so you can use both side by side.
Great, and we'll keep you up to date on our experiences with that in coming shows. And now it's time for a new segment, AusFox Rocks Networking. We mentioned this previously with regard to AusFox Lite, and that's going to be one of the themes we focus on there at that conference, getting an idea of all the Australian and New Zealand VFP developers around the place and maybe just a snapshot of what skills that they can provide. But in this show, what we wanted to do is just point to a company that's VFP based in Australia and some work they're doing. So this show, we're looking at Info Today, which is Sydney based, run by John Burrows, who's a regular at the Sydney VFP user group. He actually doesn't know that we're doing this kind of plug for him, but it's just to let you know that he does a lot of VFP and Crystal Reports integration work. So if that's a need you've got, look him up on the web. Just Google Info Today and he'll come up. So that's this show's plug, and we'll try and feature a company in each show.
And we're trying to feature basically the company's talents rather than the company's products, aren't we? So
yeah.
We're sort of networking. If you've got a need and you need someone to solve it or produce a solution for you.
Exactly. I quite often get asked for Crystal Reports expertise. It's not something we do here at Talman, and I point them to John, and that's a great link to have. And you know, we'll be talking about others that we point to for Westwind web connection work or whatever it is, anyone that uses VFP with open source and stuff like that. So it's good to know that, and we're going to try and get this networking list of Australian people up in the coming months. Now we're getting to the end of the show, but one last comment we wanted to make is just picking up on a mention we made in the last show about whether you should upgrade to VFP 9 Service Pack 1. And our general feeling was it's not a mandatory update. You know, if you've been running fairly happily on VFP 9, then there's no real compelling reason to move to SP 1.
I guess it was, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah. And I guess what we failed to kind of clarify or make clear is that there is a whole bunch of fixes in SP1. So obviously, if there's something in your app that isn't working in VFP9 and fixing it goes to SP1, then of course that is a reason to move.
So if it is broke, fix it.
Yes, exactly. So we just wanted to throw in that clarification. We did have a few comments from people pointing that out to us. So thanks for doing that, and we're always happy to receive feedback. So this is a show that we hope helps people, not confuses them. So if there's something that we can clarify further, please let us know. That's it for this month's show of OzFox Rocks. Thanks for joining us. Hope it's been helpful. We'll see you next show.
It's been a great user experience. I'm sure we've provided many stories to take away in the VFP space.
Bye for now.